Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 0.035% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching never changed anything.
Come outside. Meet the people in your community where you live. Meet the people in the communities where you work. And meet the people in the communities where you represent.
See the face of poverty.
See the face of poverty.
We met Ann Valdez a year ago. She was living under the poverty line like millions of other Americans. So we decided to come back a year later and see how Ann's doing.
My grandparents were one of the first tenants to live here in 1954.
Has the situation gotten better for you?
No, it actually hasn't changed very much. Right now I'm living on approximately $200 cash a month, $360 food stamps. I do not have a full-time job.
How long have you gone without full-time work?
I haven't worked full-time since, on a daily basis, since about 2004.
How important are the safety nets out there for you right now? The things that are paid for by the government?
Well, the safety nets are very important, and the more that they get cut, the scarier it is to think about tomorrow.
I buy a lot of non-perishables so that this way there's always something to eat.
Most of the jobs that they try to get for us are minimum wage jobs. So if I get a minimum wage job, it's still going to lead me to have to apply for Medicaid and food stamps. So I'm still dependent on the system.
Sometimes you have to forget about getting what's healthy because you can't afford what's healthy.
2 for $5. We are in poverty. We have education. We have abilities. We have aspirations. We have families. We have the same thing that Apple Pie America has.
Brian, your mom grew up in poverty. You've grown up so far in the same situation. What are your aspirations? What do you want to become?
I want for high people in the high chairs, like the senator, the congressman, even the mayor, comes down here, see what's going on in these neighborhoods, see how destroyed these neighborhoods are, the spirits of these people. They are completely gone.
All right, so what would you like to aspire to?
What are your dreams?
Right now I have them.
You were telling me before, Brian, firefighter?
Yeah, that's what it was. That's what I want to be, a firefighter.
Have you ever not lived on food stamps?
Yes, when I worked for the state.
So for how long in your life have you lived off of food stamps?
For maybe a year.
In your whole life?
Yeah.
Today's podcast on This My House is titled Millionaire Economics with Robin Lynn Maben, and we'll have her on in a few minutes. Live stream number 619-768-2945, and she'll break down what Millionaire Economics is all about. But before we bring her on, now we set the tone with this lady and her son. They live on the equivalent of $600 a month. You heard her say, out of that, $200 in cash. So that's $50 a week that her and her son live on, off of in the United States. And most people, they can't comprehend that. But anyway, that's what we're doing this podcast today on Millionaire Economics. Now, like I said, before we go to Robin, let's play some. Well, you know, matter of fact, let's open up the mic now. So whatever she says will make these other audios more comprehensible. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning.
Good morning. Well, tell us, define what a millionaire is and what's near millionaire economics.
All right. A millionaire is a person who we might think is broke, and they might feel broke. No money, no job, no house. But the millionaire is the person who can find opportunity in whatever circumstance they're in. Mm-hmm. So you take and you use what you got. Now, basically, let me give you an example. When I was homeless, I had to stay in the shelters. I had to stand in line, stay in a shelter. Most nights, I would stand in line, and there was no bed. So they would tell me, you can't get a bed tonight. I would say in my mind, yes, I can get a bed. I might have to go to the middle of a park and lay down, but I got a bed. You see? There was a lady that I used to pass walking on my way to go try to find something to eat. She'd be working in her lawn, weeding, taking the garbage out, whatever. And I used to always ask her, can I help you? And she would say, no, I ain't got no money to pay you. And she was really rude to me, but I kept asking her. Well, one day I just stopped asking her, and I just sat down, and I just started helping her. Well, after the next few times of me doing this, she come handed me a sandwich. Next couple of times, she come handed me a few dollars. So I had actualized the millionaire concept by creating a job for myself out of seemingly nothing. So now we can take and begin to apply that in almost any situation. Let's say in a church congregation, you've got a woman and her husband just died, and they've got a big house and maybe even some farmland, and you've got a family that's out of work. but they're able-bodied, so they can go and work that land or go and help that woman out maintaining her property. Maybe she can't pay them, but they can grow their food, or they can do something in kind. A lawn business can be started. A landscaping business can be started. That same woman, maybe she's got her husband's old tools, and there are maybe somebody in the church is getting out of prison, and he can't find a job. So maybe that woman can now lend his the tools just long enough for him to get a job and bring in some income, where he can begin to buy his own supplies. See? The million-dollar
right.
concept.
Okay? Right. All right. What we're going to do, taking the basic definition and examples that you gave us, we're going to play some audio of, I would call the millionaire concept and methodology. First place we're going to go is over to India. This audio is calling trash wealth, turning trash into homes.
Waste. What to do with it? It's a worldwide problem that's mounting.
The city of Karachi alone produces 10,000 tons of waste every single day. Much of that is non-biodegradable and is burnt or goes to landfill. But one local environmentalist thinks she's found the answer.
Necessity is the mother of invention. When the two go together, when you have this creative spirit in you, well, this is what happens.
Nargis Latif trained as a botanist. She's dedicated her life to protecting the environment in Pakistan's most populated, overcrowded city, Karachi. Her project, Gulbahal, deals with two major problems for the modern world: reducing waste and an increasing need for housing. She's making homes from garbage.
It's modular, it's weatherproof, it's low cost, and it is put up in just a matter of hours. Hey presto, you have just empty land. Yeah, after say 4 or 5 hours, you have a two-storied house.
Gulbahal works in conjunction with local factories to collect clean waste they simply don't need anymore, ready shredded. Or from landfill sites, they collect crisp packets, biscuit wrappers, things we use every single day that can be reused.
It's total waste. That's why they bring it to us.
And you're making use of it?
Yes. You see this house, you see this bed, you see this chair.
The strips of clean or dirty waste are used to fill up large sacks to make bricks, as Latif calls them, which are then bound together to form structures like shelters and houses, making use of non-biodegradable waste and reducing damage to the environment.
This is clean, but this is filthy. You can collect this waste material, which otherwise would have gone into the seas, into the rivers, into the gutter lines. You can stop that. I mean, use stuff like this.
The Chandigarhs, or silver homes, were first used during a natural disaster years ago, delivered to hundreds of homeless people in the north of Pakistan.
And when the Sandy storm took place, I was really wishing I could meet somebody and, you know, send it abroad to you so that it could be used there. Because this is quick to put up. We put them up when the earthquake took place in 2005. When the floods took place a couple of years ago in the Punjab, and then recently in Sindh, then here in the neighborhood a fire took place, we put up 10 houses there.
And her solutions don't end there. She's literally building gardens in the sky, plants grown in plastic bags, and even modular swimming pools. It's a source of employment for a handful of people, but Nadeep hopes to scale up this project, working with local NGOs to provide housing, not just in natural disasters, but for Pakistan's rapidly growing population. Saima Mohsin, CNN, Karachi.
Okay, now you can go to our Facebook page, which is titled Housemakers Social Network. Housemakers Social Network, and you can see that video there. Now, what I like about that video, like, they're taking trash and making it into homes. Now, here in the United States, there's a similar concept. Earthships. I took a week long hands on workshop for that some years ago, and we're gonna play some audio on how that. But basically, with Earthships, they also take trash and build homes. When I did it, let's see, the week I did it, in 7 days we built a cottage from scratch, finished off another cottage, then built an addition onto a barn using pallets. What else we did? And we had a couple few field trips too in that 7 days. Now, the Earthship concept is basically using non-traditional, or what, code enforcement, okay, in your urban areas. What code enforcement would consider, they wouldn't even consider them non-traditional building methods. They would consider it trash, okay, illegal. But you can, once you step out, right here in the United States, once you step outside of these Nazi-controlled urban areas, these big cities, where you're not in reach of code enforcement, legally speaking, then, like I say, what we did was the cottage that we built, Straw Bale Earthship, it was, the foundation was built from, we took tires, worn out tires, blown out tires, tires that were in the dump, on the side of the highway, that type of thing, and because we were in a rural area, and we took what materials were our hand, which was dirt, earth, and rammed earth. Look it up. There are plenty of videos of it on YouTube. And we packed those in. That was like the first evening that we were there. We packed those in and then formed our foundation. Eventually after we, you know, finished it, it was, you know, we had straw bale and cob in there as well. We mixed and made the cob and all that. But we took soda cans, beer cans, plastic bottles, glass bottles that people had thrown away. And that helped you can't see it the way we, you know, put the cob over it and everything, but that's how we built this cottage. And the second one that we finished up was made that way. But if you look at it on site, even at close inspection, because it's covered up, but and those structures are used as for income. They're used for income now. So Earthships, I would recommend you type in Earthships on any search engine. There's plenty of information on them, plenty of houses. You can see how they're constructed. YouTube has a documentary on a guy. It's called Garbage Warrior, and it focuses on an architect. His name is Mike Reynolds. Mike Reynolds coined the term Earthship, and they took his designation from him. they thought he was off. They thought he was batshit crazy by taking trash and building structures out of it, homes out of it, that were completely off the grid. No water company, no municipal water. Recycling, all that within the thing that he built. They took his license from him. But they eventually gave it back to him because he made the establishment and the architecture community look like idiots. Particularly when green became fashionable. So he's got his nitro, his shit ton of money for consultations and whatnot. But look up, go on YouTube and type in Garbage Warrior. That's the documentary by Mike Reynolds. We'll probably post it on our Facebook page as well, so you can look, watch it there as well. But the very fascinating. But anyway, so now you have people who have built Earthships around the globe. Most people still don't know about it. You're not going to build this in Los Angeles, Miami, Chicago, St. Louis, because of the political powers back that be don't want that there. If you're taught how to build homes out of things that people threw away, you know, then the people that manufacture new bricks, new this, new that, will basically become bankrupt. But there are plenty of places right here in the United States and North America where, and of course this show is listened to globally, where you can legally put up these structures. We're going to be doing that at the locations that we select right here in the United States. So let me go to some other audio. So that last audio I played, Turning Trash into Homes, that's on our Facebook page. The next one we're going to go to, and I was introduced to this concept 2 years ago by two young ladies who came to our Oklahoma location. Flooring made out of paper bags. Yes, brown paper bags making flooring. You're not going to go to Home Depot, Menards, Lowe's, to do what a brown paper bag or paper bags that people throw away, they can become chic and stylish floor coverings.
Have you heard of paper bag flooring? A quick internet search reveals all the juicy details on how this is installed. Paper bag flooring requires a concrete base. We need a patio, and we want something completely different. This thing is going to have an organic round shape.
We cut 3 strips of our continuous bag so that we can outline our porch that we're going to be making right here. We're going to put earth bag on the outside and cement on the inside.
The earth bag will be used as a concrete form instead of the usual wood frame.
Fill this up with homemade concrete.
We make our concrete using what's left over from the sifted sand. We mix 7 parts of this gravel and 1 part Portland cement to make our concrete. We take it to the patio area and dry pour it. Creates a flat patio surface. Mixing this dry was probably not the best way to do this. The cement washed away and left pebbles on the top. Shay adds some more cement, but not sure how much it helped.
Rock sand, Mom.
Good.
The excess gravel is swept off. The surface is not as smooth as we would like, so we make a plan to fix it. Our new plan requires sifted sand, but our mixture slash sifter stops working when it runs off the gear. This does not stop us. We find an old window frame and screen material and continue sifting. Mixing 7 parts sand with 1 part Portland cement gives us a smooth mixture. This time, we mix it wet. The patio was sprayed down so it can bind with this new top layer mix.
I'm just going to try out a couple different tools, see which what works best to make the smoothest and best outcome.
Which one do you like better, Shay?
This one.
The metal?
Yeah.
Now that's the smooth surface we're looking for. After a few days of curing, we are ready for the next step. Shay carefully sweeps away the excess sand. The transition between the concrete and the bags are done as smooth as possible. A couple of patches were needed where the dogs tried out the concrete too soon. Now what we've been waiting to try, we gather the material. Paper bags, bucket, 1 gallon of glue, water jug, stain, and spar varnish since we have an outdoor application. According to the online instructions, we tear the bags into pieces and wad them up.
We're going to put the glue in here.
Glue, water, and mix. Then we paint the pieces with glue, using the straight edges where appropriate. We figure out later it was better to soak the paper in the glue mixture instead of painting it on.
Now we'll just wait for this to dry. And
the next day, stain is applied. Now we will need to wait another 24 hours for it to dry.
Aiming for a bit of flexibility, we decided...
The marine verathane is both strong and flexible. We try various glues to secure edges if needed, liquid nails for large areas, and super glue for the little ones. Then we caulk in around the building.
We put on a couple coats of that on there, but I didn't... It said not to shake it, so it's really good. I didn't shake it. However, I'm supposed to stir it. And so we have these dull places and these shiny places. So although that was going to be my last coat, now I better put on another coat. The other thing is that I was really concerned because there was just so many bubbles on the floor. And according to what I read about these floors, they do settle down. And you can see it is starting to settle down. It's been about a week. So the one gal on there had written that it took about 2 weeks to settle down.
It's not 100% flat like we were expecting.
I don't think the glue that we used was that great on our homemade concrete. Maybe on a normal concrete floor.
Yeah, maybe
okay.
A stronger glue to
something.
Keep
I don't
it
know.
More secure. I think if we did it again, I don't think we'd use the same sealer because it's a little on the shiny side for us.
You can see the red from the paper bag coming through, and even a little bit of the earth bag, there's a little bit of discoloration.
There's also a lot of, where it looks like the stain's gathered, spots here seeping through. But other than that, it kind of all blends because of the actual, there's a lot of color in this floor. Gives it style.
I love the color.
And it's really durable because the only thing that it harms when the dogs are prancing on it is our mental state. But the floor is just fine, so.
We've had this patio for 3 weeks. How it will hold up with lots of foot traffic, only time will tell. Check out our website in the link below. We will be adding new updates there. We've also included links we used as reference to this project. Thanks for watching, and good luck paper bagging.
Please subscribe. For more information, you can click the website link below.
By the way, Garen fixed our mixer using a skateboard wheel, so now it's back up and running as our sand sifter.
Well, if you see me around the trash can after lunch collecting paper bags, you'll know what I'm doing. I'm collecting materials. So paper bag flooring, let's see. You're not going to find that like at your, you're not going to find that in the code. Next audio we're going to play are people who have built houses or building houses using earth bags. And like I said, you can type in earth bags or earth bag house in the search engine, including YouTube, and you can see people who have built homes out of earth bags. Essentially, an earth bag, also called a sandbag, you take earth, dirt, sticks, stones, whatever available at your feet in your immediate surroundings, in the wilderness. That's what you put in these things. And they become your building blocks for your home. Like I said, there's a never-ending, I mean, there are books written on earth bags. And a lot of this, I mean, if you look at the history of man, particularly the history of man and man-made shelters, okay, Menards, Home Depot, and Lowe's, and even the hardware, a lot of hardware stores as we know them today did not exist 150 years ago. Okay. On the plantation, master didn't, there was no plant. I mean, so we learn how, that's the history of man. In 2019, which is not even a blip of a blip in the history of the time of man when it comes to man building stuff, okay, get back to basics with this millionaire thinking. Anyway, we're going to play this audio on this guy who's building a house on with earth bags. You'll be speaking momentarily. Any time now. And matter of fact, while we're waiting on him to speak,
Welcome to the audio channel. Today, we have my earth bag home. I'm going to talk about five mistakes that you can make building an earth bag home. So what's an earth bag home? Our earth bag home is a home built with sandbags. As you see, we dig deep into the hole, at least a foot in, started building up earth bags so it could have a solid structure. We took earth bags or sandbags and filled them with dirt, mixed them with water. And when you mix them with a little bit of water and let the sun hit them, they become hard. Now, first mistake I made with an earth bag home was not putting tarp over the earth bag when it rains. You can get so far. This structure collapsed on me almost probably 8 times. So, not the entire structure, but certain areas of it. So that's one mistake you can make. Make sure that when you're doing the earth bag, that when you're done for the day, you put a tarp over it, around it, so when it rains, it doesn't beat down on the structure because the structure starts to get mushy and it starts to fall where you have disproportions in the wall. All right? The second problem you can run into with an earth bag home is not having them lined up. You see here? Where it's not completely lined up together. Now, you may think it's okay later on to come back and lean it back the other way, but that just makes it collapse more. Take your time, make sure that it's aligned. Each row that you're going, I know you're rushing, but each row that you're going, make sure it's aligned. So you have this one, this one, this one. Then it goes in. Then we try to make it work by coming out. Then we go back in. This is problems you're gonna face with your earth bag home. This is going to work because we solidified it with other aspects. But you don't want to do that when you're starting your earth back home, okay? All right, next, the third mistake you can make is not putting your frame in early. See, before we did door framing, we didn't have a frame, and now the earth bags had nothing to support itself. So when you're going around and they don't have nothing to support or places weight upon, it could collapse. So you want to put your things in here. Here, this used to be a wall, but now it's a window because it fell a couple of times, and I thought, let me be creative and put windows there. So placing your windows and your frame for your door is imperative in the early stages of putting your earth bag home together. All right, also with earth bags, in between these bags are wires of barbed wire. So there's barbed wire in between each bag, which acts as a Velcro, all right? So now you got a Velcro, allows the bag to stick. But the negative thing is if it falls, all it pulls all the bags with it. So one of the things that you want to do that I haven't done, and I have to admit this, and I've seen it on video, is add rebar. Take rebar when you're halfway up and bang it through certain areas so it keeps it stuck and allow it to be at least 2 feet in the ground. So it allows your walls not to topple over. But this is solid now. This is very solid. And I'm going to keep you updated as we go with the earth back home. But one of the biggest mistakes you can make is because you're rushing and it looks so good, you don't pat the bags all the way down. You pat them enough where you say, hey, I'm going to stack, and you want to stack. Bang the bags down as hard as you can. See, we use bricks, which worked later, but initially we didn't. So we stacked bags, we stepped on it, hit it with a shovel, and thought it was going to work. It absolutely did not work. So later we came with a brick to put the weight on it. But one of the things that you can use is this special tool right here. This is a square tamper. Put the earth bag down, drop it on there. Put the earth bag down, continue to drop it on there. This is also how you're going to make your ground for your earth bag home. This is going to flatten it out. Because even if it rains and you don't happen to put that tarp on that day, it'll be so flat that there's no room for it to squeeze, and it compresses the dirt so hard where it forms a brick. And that's some of the things that you can learn from an earth bag home. So learn from my mistakes. Don't make the same mistakes. But the material alone for the earth bag, the earth bag itself, because I was in a rush, cost me $2,000. You can find enough earth bags for the same price for about $800. But if you want rush delivery or you want it where it's going to come at a certain time, you can get it from Cal Earth for this amount. And it's a huge place right here. This is 20 by 20. And I got extra bags left over. But if you want to do something smaller, you can get them from China, but they take longer to get here. They can take up to 6 months to get here. And that's the problem. So Earth Bag Home is very cheap. It's very convenient. And Brother Horatio, come over here and tell them some of the stuff about the earth bag home. If we in war.
So, one of the things that you use in a military aspect is sandbags. Sandbags slow bullets down. So, that's a positive about the earth bags. The wider you go out, the better it is. Obviously, large size shells is not going to really stop it, but I mean, regular bullets, 45s, even the 50 cals, they shouldn't penetrate it. The wider you go out, the better it is for your system.
So there you go. We got us a bulletproof home. Not only that, it's made of the earth. You don't have to chop down no trees besides your windows and your frames, and you're making stuff with the earth in order to utilize what you have around you. I'm Nasi Ashuva. Make sure you subscribe, hit the like button, and learn from the mistakes of the earth bag that I made.
Now, earth bag building, this is labor-intensive, but I'd rather have a labor-intensive type thing than giving money when I don't have to Menards, Home Depot, or Lowe's. Those are good places now, but if I don't have to give money to them, I can save a lot of money. On top of that, like I said, when you build these, typically you're out of reach of what I call the Nazi code enforcement people, legally speaking. And and the best benefit of all is you're not locked into a 30-year mortgage. All right. The last audio we're going to play is dealing with building a house with tires.
All right, what we've got here is a line running down the property line, about 10 feet off of a 15 feet off of a drop-off that heads down to the creek, right? And somewhere going down that drop-off is our property line. We're going to put a tiny house about where the camera is sitting, right? And I've got a guy coming next week to fix my road. He's going to dig out for a root cellar / storm shelter. He's got to have some extra dirt. And since we're going to build some buildings down, you know, facing the road here where you see these tires. He needs a place to put some dirt. So we set these tires out to let him know to put the dirt in the center of these U's. Now, what these U's are, they're going to be a foundation for a variety of buildings. And the foundation, instead of digging in down under the frost line and putting in gravel and cement and all that sort of stuff, traditional construction methods, we're going to use tires. Because tires are so wide, you can get by without having to dig as deep, right? And so we're also experimenting with cutting out one end of the sidewall versus, you know, normally when you do earthship, you know, ram tire construction, you're using the regular tire as it is and you're pounding in dirt sideways. And they say it takes about 40 minutes per tire and a lot of labor. Well, I stumbled upon an experiment a guy did in college where he built buildings, walls, traditionally using ram earth, and then cutting one of the sidewalls out, and then he put shear stress on it. Basically, he hooked it to a car, and he pulled on it with a car. And you do give up a little bit of strength by cutting one sidewall out, but instead of 40 minutes a tire, it's about 10 minutes a tire, a lot less labor-intensive, and it is still stronger than traditional building methods. So what we're going to do, and we have to come back, and we'll show you how we're going to make everything square. Right now, it's just a placeholder. We haven't even cut out all the sidewalls. But what we're going to do is we're going to make basically a 10-foot by 10-foot interior space about four tires high, and then we'll come back and we'll, you know, cob and cordwood and wattle and daub and, you know, adobe, all sorts of the different types of construction methods as we build these buildings to see and sort of experiment what we like the best, right? And we're going to do a dog trot. So we've got a building here. We're going to have a dog trot covered area like for an outdoor kitchen. We've got another building. We're going to do another outdoor area like for a blacksmith shop and then another area. We're going to build all the foundations at one time, going to come in and timber frame everything and put it all under roof, and then we're going to come back and fill in the upper half of the structure. That's the plan. Plans change, though. We'll have to see. I guess it depends on when James gets tired of helping me fill tires. But stay tuned for all the cool stuff at Dole Homestead. We're going to have lots of cool new projects that you haven't seen before. Thanks.
Okay, so YouTube's got a gazillion videos on this type of stuff. But you might see a demonstration in a New York City or Chicago or Seattle, Washington, but the zonations on this stuff, which is all political, you're not going to find anybody you can basically wipe out, or not wipe out, but eliminate homelessness to a very high degree, maybe not 100% of it, but a lot of it, in a matter of weeks by building these structures that we're talking about, earthships, using earth bags, building homes out of trash, which they're, matter of fact, I'll say this. The United States, let's look at the United States in a global perspective as far as retail and wholesale selling of anything. The United States and Western countries, to a very high degree, are end-user retail markets, all right? If you want to look into the future, if you want to see some what we would call innovation in the United States, go to Africa. Go to India. Go to these developing countries where there's less government interference in your creativity. And you can take trash and turn it into a nice, stylish home. The late Steve Jobs, I know he went to India. And I believe when he was in India, Because in India, matter of fact, in Asia, in Africa, they're more sustainable than they than we are in Western countries, particularly here in the United States. They're really, they're not in the into wasting space, materials, or whatever. And I believe Steve Jobs probably saw that, you know, that they were doing things smaller. And thus, the idea for Apple computers can come up, because when he was starting out with Apple, him and Wozniak, essentially the big main computers in the Western world, particularly in the United States, were the big mainframe computers, and there was nothing small, nothing personal, as we know today, or even going back to the Commodore 64 days, or Compaq or something like that, you know, back in the 70s, early 80s. And same thing with solar. Solar in Western countries, particularly in the United States, is oversized, and most solar that you might see on somebody's, you know, in a residential home are basically industrial-sized solar panels. But if you go to Africa, particularly rural Africa, rural India, rural Southeast Asia, then you're going to see, like, little small solar panels. Some of them can fit in the palm of your hand. And those things power these homes. Now, granted, they don't have the gas guzzle, I mean, not the gas guzzle, the power-sucking appliances that we have in the United States, but they live pretty comfortably. And what happens is, and this is why I brought up Steve Jobs again, what some people do is they go to these, what in air quotes, developing countries, and they see something that we don't have, at least mass-produced in Western countries. They come back here, and then all of a sudden it becomes chic, particularly when they jack the price up or whatever, and they become billionaires or whatever. So like I say, if you go to our Facebook page, Homemakers or Housemakers, excuse me, Housemakers social network, and then you'll see at least got two. Nargis Latif is the lady that's featured in the trash to taking trash and turning them into homes out of India. So that's some of the things that we're going to be doing here in the United States. So we got a plot of land that we have an escrow. We'll be closing on that the last week in this month. We're in April. Today's April 2nd. We've got three people in already. I was the first one. I got 1,000 in. So we've got, we had one went yesterday. 7 spots left, but I might reduce that down to 3 or 4 more spots. I don't even know if I want 8 people in on this. But what we'll be able, because it's an hour away from Chicago and Pembroke, Illinois, we're going to be doing some of the things that you hear here and the other things that you will be hearing. We'll be actually be using alternative building materials, building structures out of using earth bag, definitely tiny houses. We're not doing any big. But for me, okay, once you, for me, 400 square feet is not a tiny house. That's a small house. But for people who have families, 400 square feet to maybe 480 square feet, I wouldn't really go as high as 500 square feet. But 400 square feet, I would say 4 adults or a family of 4, with big kids, if they got too big, will be comfortable with them. All the places that we'll be doing will be in basically rural areas. So we'll give, because today's just Tuesday, we'll give more information about the project in Pembroke, Illinois. But it's an hour away from Chicago, because in Chicago, you're not going to put up a structure legally with earth bags. Most of the stuff that you might hear on this podcast. Tiny houses, you're not going to, it's banned in the city of Chicago. However, the first audio that I did play. Now, here's what they have in Chicago, Seattle, Washington, D.C., San Antonio, Dallas, Metroplex here in Miami, all in San Diego. In all these big cities, you've got people like the first audio I played, the lady, Liz, offers $600 a month. Now, that's $600 in financial resources, EBT cards and all that. Out of that $600, it's $200 in cash. So let me play the part of that again because it's, I'll play the whole thing because it's only 3 minutes long.
Come outside, meet the people in your community where you live, meet the people in the communities where you work, and meet the people in the communities where you represent.
See the face of poverty.
See the face of poverty.
We met Ann Valdez a year ago. She was living under the poverty line like millions of other Americans. So we decided to come back a year later and see how Ann's doing.
My grandparents were one of the first tenants to live here in 1954.
Has the situation gotten better for you?
No, it actually hasn't changed very much. Right now, I'm living on approximately $200 cash a month, $360 food stamps. I do not have a full-time job.
How long have you gone without full-time work?
I haven't worked full-time since, on a daily basis, since about 2004.
How important are the
2019 right now. So she lives, because in audio, in that video, you see her son. So that's two people on $50 a week, essentially. All right. That's the amount of cash she has to deal with. So she's obviously not filling up at the gas station. So and our offline, this is why we talk about it online, but we purchased land, or in the process of purchasing land, more land in Illinois, so we can actually teach people or show people this is how you can live. So, because there's a bunch of people that are living in Chicago, Illinois right now that are struggling. Just like her. They got a family, and they only got $200 a month in cash to deal with. So one of the things that we'll be organizing are shuttles in between those two areas, but or anywhere we're at. But now, a big problem with a lot of people like her, the $200 cash really isn't the problem. See, we're made to feel that way socially living in cities wherever she's living in an urban area. But she's got plenty to – she can prosper off that $200 a month. I mean prosper, not just get by, but prosper. The biggest challenge is psychological, in my opinion. If you can convince her or people like her 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour, maybe 2 hours in some cases, outside of your current comfort zone and get to an area where you won't have the zoning Nazis on your ass and you can operate legally, you can build an earthship. You can build a chic house made from trash. And I said, chic. Go to YouTube. There's no shortage of videos of earthships that are chic. She can get 9 or 12 friends together to help her build an earth bag house or earthship house or some, all of them are made from trash, essentially. And get a house for her and her family, grow food. You don't have to go to Whole Foods or wherever you might go. You know, it'll cut down on your food bill dramatically. You don't need the EBT anymore. But so it's, in my opinion, if you, that's the biggest challenge of pulling people, and I'm not trying to pull nobody out anyway. You either do it, it's either what you want to do or not. But a lot of people are in bondage because for some reason you can't pull them out of Chicago, you can't pull them out of San Diego, you can't pull them out of San Antonio, you can't pull them out of Miami or New York. Can't pull them out. And thus, they stay in that poverty cycle. But as Robin stated, and we'll bring her back on momentarily, you have to have that millionaire mindset. You might appear to be broke, but if you know how to build using the materials that you have access to, immediate access to, or no more than one square mile radius away you're setting foot right now. There are people in Chicago, there are people in rent court right now that are facing eviction. That one square mile from that courthouse or one square mile from where they live at is enough materials if you have the millionaire mindset of how to recognize, you know what? I can take that and turn that into this. That's why I play. Come on now. Taking paper bags and making it into a nice, stylish, and chic floor, you're not going to get that at Walmart. You're not going to get it at Walmart. You're not going to get it at Menards, Home Depot, or Lowe's. And we're going to bring on some people on our podcast, plus Robin's hooking us up with a multi-platform so you can get the visual of this. And then that's why we're buying the land in places like Pembroke, Illinois, so we can have a hands-on social network where you can actually participate and see it up close and personal, so it'll become real to you. Now, that same lady, living with her son on $200 a month, she can get together with some friends and build something. And Robin came up with this yesterday. It, you know what? You don't even have to live in it. Build one for yourself, and then you know what? The next one you build, put it up on Airbnb. Let's say you rent it out for $200 a weekend or what have you. She's just doubled her cash income. Then put up another one. And then another one. And another one. That's what I love about the United States and Western countries. Well, particularly the United States. We waste. We waste food. We waste space. We throw out a whole bunch of shit that can be used to get wealthy. Let's go back to Robin, and we'll go to other people on the phone line. Robin, what say you?
Yeah. Waste management and waste utilization. See? Those same people, instead of being in a rental court debating about rent, they could have taken that time and come up with a solution that says, well, you know what? If you're willing to go out and gather all the materials and then help build, I'll let you stay free, but you've got to build me one or two more and gather the materials too. So then you can stay free and build me these other two where I can make up the income back like that, get a return on investment. Millionaire concept. Apply it.
Right. And I like what you said. I'm putting this down. Waste utilization. Now, you know what? That can be a high school course or a college. You know what?
Waste it needs to be.
That can be a college degree. But colleges typically see what's on the landscape, so we're early. So,
So watch this. Where you have Salvation Army, for example, that goes out, and they come to your homes in that big truck, and they take away your donations. Well, they could take away the bigger household items that usually the will get hauled off to the dump maybe once or twice a year, okay? And they can also take the yard waste and everything else just the same. And so now instead of recycling, we can repurpose. We can do waste utilization.
Right.
Absolutely.
Now people that are listening, this is what Robin's talking about, waste utilization, write it down, waste management. Those are going to be future professions to many people. Right now, there might not even be a college on, at least in the Western world, that offers a Bachelor of Science or Bachelor of Arts in waste utilization or waste management.
Utilization. Yes.
Trust me, these are going to be, matter of fact, if you want a job right now, you can invent one. You know what? You can go around, create a company called Waste Utilization and start going in people's start looking in, go to a park and start looking in trash, waste receptacles or whatever you want to call them, looking for plastic bags. I mean, not plastic bags, but you know what? Why not put plastic bags and brown
paper bags, cardboard.
Period. Because that will get cardboard, right? That will be, for instance, you know what? Because I'm looking at right now, because I get a lot of stuff from Amazon. I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Amazon boxes that I've, ordered stuff from. I was going to throw those out. I'm not going to do it now. Because essentially, it'll be throwing out money.
Yeah, you're sitting on a gold mine there, okay? Because that can be material that can be an answer to a lot of solutions. So now, watch this. In the cities where they have, like in Seattle, for instance, it's an eyesore. I think you sent me the ad where people are ashamed to have people come visit them in Seattle because of the eyesore of the tiny homes. So now cities can answer that problem, and instead of tiny homes, they can build these, I forget what you call them, but they can make these packs, out of these bags and build them, and then they won't be an eyesore right there on those, those people are going to occupy those places anyway. And you have to answer that problem. And so if you're not going to let them, if you're not in my backyard and whatever, so if they found a place for themselves to settle, then let's make it easy for them and where it doesn't have to be an eyesore and it can be sanitized and structurally safe. It's an answer.
These are going to be, even waste engineering. There might be a degree from Harvard or Yale in that one day.
It needs to be.
Right. They have creative people like Robin. And then you got people coming in from different countries, developing countries. Americans who are napping, this is where the ball is going.
Okay.
And the last place, typically it's going to show up last in your largest city. Okay, but in your smallest, and there's a gazillion smaller cities all through the United States, the smaller cities where, this is like cable television. That didn't start off in your large cities in the United States like New York or Chicago or Los Angeles.
I think.
Cable television started in like little, small, unheard of cities. That's where
I feel
basically everything starts, including Walmart in this country.
I feel strongly that if the cities got involved, this could be an answer to the homelessness a problem.
Well,
and I feel strongly that he can be in the cities first, and I think that the cities really need to get behind it because they've got the personnel and the funding that they could incorporate this quite easily. It'll probably save them a whole bunch of money, too. They could take all the stuff from the landfill and reduce the cost of the landfill and blah, blah,
that's
blah,
true,
blah.
Here's the rub and the catch-22 with that, particularly in your larger cities. Now, you might be able to do it in a small city that might have maybe 1,000 people or less, or even, let's say, 400 people or less. But when you get to like a Chicago, St. Louis, Seattle, Miami, those were Orlando, a lot of those big city politicians, they don't want to be embarrassed. They want to see where it's been done first. Big city politicians don't want any. They don't want to be the first because if they're the first and something goes wrong, and if they get embarrassed or they can't be reelected, you know.
Well, you know what?
They don't like that.
I hear what you're saying, but in lieu of the fact that most of them jokers are scoundrels and scalawags anyway, I'm not too concerned about their concerns about integrity and being embarrassed and all of that. I think there's going to be municipalities that will grasp the concept, and there you go, because there are quite a few municipalities that are very fair. And for the people, there are some awesome townships out there. So those are the ones that I'm talking to. Bully for the rest.
Well, the matter of fact, let's go to where Walmart started out at. Let's see. Bentonville, Arkansas. I think we're hold it. Let me get the history of Walmart. Sam Walton. I get accurate on this. Sam Walton. Okay. He was born in Kingfisher, Oklahoma. Where's that first Walmart? First stores. In 1945, after leaving the military, Walton took over management of his first variety store at age 26 with the help of a $20,000 loan from his father-in-law. For $5,000 he had saved from the Army, Walton purchased a Ben Franklin variety store in Newport, Arkansas. The store was a franchise of the Butler Brothers chain. Let's go to Newport, Arkansas. Newport, Arkansas today has a population of 7,879. That's where the action is, people. If you want to see things on the come up, if you want to see the future of whether of any city of any size like Chicago, St. Louis, San Antonio, Orlando, Miami, you got to go to these small towns. Let's see. All right, Newport, Arkansas. Within a year, let's see. Bentonville, Arkansas. I think that's when the first Walmart. All right, they have a population today of 49,000. But I had to look up what was the population of Bentonville back when he got started. But he started in, what was the other town I just talked about? Newport, Arkansas. Newport, Arkansas, today's population is 7,879. It was probably smaller back when he got started with Walmart. I mean, when he started learning the business side, and then the Butler Brothers chain,
which I don't know if that still is in existence. Butler Brothers was a retail and wholesaler supplier based out of Chicago. And I don't think they're still in business today. Ben Franklin Stores, because they started in 1877. But anyway, that's where the action is. So that's why we target tiny towns to do what we need to do, But anyway,
yeah.
Like I say, most people that live in an urban area, you probably think we're batshit crazy until it gets fashionable and whatnot. Let's go to our phone lines here. 314, your mic is open.
What do you say, Ellie?
How's it going?
You know, listening to that lady early on, they was making cements. You know, you don't use six parts. When you make concrete, you use one part cement, two parts sand, and three parts of aggregate with very little water. It's a learned habit on how much water to use, but it should be workable, but it shouldn't be soupy.
Right.
If you put it in a container that's 12 inches tall and turn it over and take the container off, it shouldn't fall no lower than 50% of its regular height, its initial height.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
then
right.
Too.
You gotta get involved with it and learn how it goes.
Yeah, then too. If people want to make those houses, you know, your foundation has to be established on undisturbed soil below the frost line of the area that you're in. You know, listen to the one guy who was doing those bag houses. I don't know where he was. You know, people look at what they do in Africa, but it never the ground don't freeze in Africa.
True.
So if you're in Michigan, you may have to go down 3 feet or more to get below the frost line. I know in Missouri, it's about 30 inches, 3 foot. And if you don't do that, then the ground's going to push your house over when it freezes and thaws. So people have to take all this stuff in consideration. If they want to live like that, then, you know, they can make you can make brick out of urine. Did you know that? The chemical process. Yeah, but because urine, you take urine and mix it with silica sand. Well, that chemical process turns it into calcium carbonate, which is basically cement. And, of course, you got to add some bacteria in to increase the activity. And a bacteria can be anything like yogurt, probably. But, yeah, urine can – I mean, it's just a chemical – you know, people have to have. That's why you need chemists and chemical engineers, so they can look at things and take it and show you what can be done with it. Because every element in nature is in one form or another. It's either combined with something else, or it sits there by itself. But I tell you what,
I just looked at what you said, and there's a bunch of articles here on the net. Bricks out of Yemen.
Yeah. And now another thing too, that kind of living is rough on your life. Because if you look at the people that had the compost toilet,
yeah,
Well, to empty a compost toilet and go through all that is going to take time. It's going to take you about a half hour to an hour to empty a compost toilet. So if people ain't got nothing to do with their time, you know, those things, I guess, is okay. You can't live a regular life, have a job, and resort to that type of living.
No, you're going to, yeah, all the stuff we're talking about, you're not going to be living a 9-to-5 lifestyle more than life.
No, you're not. And like if you build a house, nothing's worse than have to have yourself dug out of a house that collapsed on you. That's why they have those building codes to make sure that things are done the right way where it won't harm the public. Then, too, if you move, somebody else move into the house. You know, in municipalities, they allow you to build your own house. It allows you to do electrical wiring, the plumbing. You have to go and demonstrate you know what you're doing. And also it has to be inspected before you can cover it up. And that's because you may move one day and somebody else innocent is moving in. Then another point, for you to get that structure insured by an insurance company, they're going to require certain things too. It's not cut and dry like it seems.
That's true. There are some good aspects of what I call them zoning notches, because some of these municipalities, they really can go in on a person over petty
well,
stuff.
Well, yeah, you gotta have that stuff because, like I say, it's for the people's safety. And you know, another thing too, people look at what they do in other countries. You know, Africans, they use the soil, they call it a layer trail soil, and the soil is different than the dirt here in the United States. The soil it's got a lot of clay in it, and they can take that and mix it with water to get it into a paste and add some carbon material to it, like grass and that, and put it in a mold and dump it over and let it cure in the sand. Then they can use it to build houses. But see, the thing they got over there, them damn termites, you know, a termite will build a termite mound as big as a house. I don't know if you ever seen one.
I've seen pictures.
Yeah, them termite mounds is as big as a house. And guess where they can get their material to build their house? They just come chew up and bite off pieces of yours to use to build theirs.
Well, it's there to be used.
Now you're not... Yeah, now your termite neighbors, and you and their termite neighbors got a fight going on. But if people do build something like that, they need to stucco the exterior and probably need to stucco the interior also, because earth does give off a radiant gas, which can be harmful for you also. Concrete do too. And if you don't stucco the outside, well, the rain will eventually wear it out. Now, those urine bricks, I bet you the material of them is very, very coarse if you look at it. And when a brick is coarse like that, it has a tendency to wear out a lot faster. So it has to be protected. It either has to be protected with a very emulsion-type paint, or you got to stucco across it with a cement and sand mix. If not, the weather will, you know, just wear your house away.
Yeah, it's a lot of articles on this. I'll be reading a lot of these today. Bio bricks. Well,
people have taken plastic bottles and used them as a and incorporated them in their walls. Fill them up with dirt, stick them in a wall for a wall material. I wouldn't do that myself, but that's what, and you know, that guy was talking about driving those rebars into the ground. Well, that there is self-defeating, because steel in contact with the earth will oxidize, and next thing you know, you ain't got nothing there. The house gonna fall on over you. You can't expose steel. Rebar like that, especially high carbon steel, which a rebar is, you can't expose it to the ground for any long length of time like it would be expected to survive for a house, because it would rust. It would rust away. And
right.
The structural, what you're trying to do is anchor it to the ground. That would go away. Then you ain't got nothing there. But no, those footings have to be down beneath the frost line, and they also have to be configured at a width and depth in order to carry the load. And they should have concrete reinforcement in it, because concrete is strong in compressive strength, but it's not strong worth a damn when it comes to tensile strength. That's why you have to put the rebars in. All right, man. Well, good luck. When you get your house, send me some pictures.
And video. We sure will.
Make sure you got some good, strong backs.
Well, that's true. Robin, anything you want to add on here to the millionaire concept and methodologies?
Just that, you know, people need to realize that they are the capital, or the currency. It's not money. It's them. So they want to build and bank on social capital. Okay? You want to have people, a bank of in your pocket, because you never know who it is that's going to come up with that idea or that suggestion or that solution that y'all can begin applying things. And now we've got some wealth generation going on. Yeah.
Yeah, and tomorrow what we'll do is tomorrow we'll even go further on the millionaire concept. We're going to feature some European villages that have there's one village that we'll feature tomorrow that or town, and they might even call it a town over there, where the town, that municipality is totally 100% operates off of renewable energy. Air, wind, even electricity is generated through poop. Fionnke just talked about, you know, making bio bricks out of urine, which I never heard of until he mentioned, but there's a lot of information on it. So we'll probably have some audio on that tomorrow as well. But in this one particular place in over in Europe, they take pig shit or cow shit or human shit, and they had the machinery, the technology to turn it into electricity that powers people's homes. We're also going to have audio tomorrow on, and we're going to place a lot of this stuff on our Facebook page, which is Housemakers Social Network, Housemakers Social Network on Facebook. It'll be on here tomorrow, where people have taken, they made bricks, but instead of going to Home Depot, Menards, or Lowe's, or the local hardware store, they go to, they have these machines that can take earth and instantaneously make bricks. Now, you got to dry them out, you know, for maybe a couple of days. But they're not buying bricks. They're just taking the available earth that's there and making them into bricks. So, and they look just like the bricks that you might buy from a big box store here in the United States. So, and a lot of this stuff you can do right here in the United States, but it's going to be done mostly in rural areas. So you can, like, you can work in Chicago, or you can work in Seattle and, you know, maybe drive 45 minutes or so to an area where you can essentially live in a house that you want to live in. Doesn't necessarily have to be tiny at all, but you can actually live, and we'll go into that in another day, because I divide, there's the United States and then what I call the real United States. The real United States of America is essentially in the rural areas of the United States. Matter of fact, I'll try to paint a picture right now that I've done in the past. About 75% of the population of the United States of America lives on only 3% of the available landmass. I'll say that again. 75%, and I think the population of the United States is over 300 million. 75% of the population of the United States, which is over 300 million, might be over 320 million, lives on only 3% of the available landmass. I don't even think it's 5%, but we'll put it 3 to 5% of the available landmass in the United States. 25% of the population of the United States is spread out over the 97%, the 97 to 95% of available landmass available. There is a bunch of land available in the United States. Some of it is wilderness. Where as of 2019, no human has ever set foot, and that's right here in the United States, scores of places, where you can buy land, not only rural, but remote. And the land is cheap, 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 cheap. And like I said, we've done some podcasts on it. We're going to do it again. If you can find your sweet spot on the 95 to 97% of the landmass in the United States that basically has little or virtually almost no regulation. Now, mind you, now let me paint a couple of pictures here. Most people who have been educated in the United States or in a Western country to a very high degree, mainstream education, even public or even private, including the Harvards and Yales, have not educated or trained us to live where we know how to build our own house without bank financing, without going to a hardware store to get the materials or whatever. We haven't been trained in that. Matter of fact, this is probably, give me somebody with a whole bunch of degrees or whatever. The people that are living in the Western world right now are probably the least educated. When we're talking about basic education in the history of education of a planet, we're probably the least educated right now with the computer and internet and everything. Here's what I'm saying. The typical person that's listened to this podcast, you don't know how to build your own house, period. You don't know how to build your house without bank financing. You don't know how to feed yourself. When I say feed yourself, I'm talking about you don't know how to catch or grow your food. If I see you out in a forest, pick any state in the union. Matter of fact, this just cover all of North America. If I see you out in the middle of a forest, where you're surrounded by vegetation, which is a forest is nature's grocery store, probably starved to death because you have not been taught how to recognize what's edible and not edible, and you probably wouldn't know how to catch anything. Probably a bear or whatever can catch you and eat you for dinner. This is right now in 2019, we are the least in the history of man, particularly in the Western world, we are the least educated. Matter of fact, the more degrees you got, the stupider you are when it comes to the basics of surviving on the planet. If there was an apocalypse like right now, or a bomb dropped down on your town, and everything you knew where you can go, get a Big Mac, buy some groceries, hopefully they were closed, they were bombed, you would die, more than likely, because you have not been educated on the basics, how to make shelter, There's a TV show called Naked and Afraid. Pretty interesting. All right, but anyway, so if I dropped a typical person that's listening to this podcast into a forest somewhere in Alaska, you're in a virtual grocery store, nature's grocery store. How long would you last? Because everything you need to build shelter, to clothe yourself, you know, because all the other God's creatures that in that forest with you that are living and breathing, the bears ain't starving, the moose aren't starving, the fish aren't starving, the insects aren't starving. But you, man, let's say you graduated from Harvard to law school or got an MBA, Masters in Business Administration, and specialization in finance is not even worth toilet paper in that environment. Because that's what it all comes down to. Even the people that you might see with these advanced degrees that are living out of the shelter in a place like New York City, Philadelphia, Chicago, something like that, they don't know, they don't have that millionaire mindset. They don't know how to recognize what building materials are available that they can make into shelter, or where they can, how they can feed themselves, or how to take one resource and convert it into cash if you happen to need cash, or barter. Modern man basically doesn't even know how to trade. United States legal tender, also known as United States dollars, or any national currency of any government, essentially a glorified food stamps. Once again, if I drop you off in a forest in Maine, Montana, let's say if I drop you off in a desert somewhere in Texas or New Mexico, because you have wildlife in the desert that survive and thrive.
They know how to break open certain plants to get water. You know,
right.
they know how they can nibble on certain plants to get nutrition. You remember the 4-H club? And the boys, and the scouts, they used to have things like that that used to teach us these things, so
right.
that if we ever forayed out and in case we got lost or stranded, we'd be able to survive. And they used to teach us that at a real young age. You ever wonder when they stopped doing that and why? There's just this dumbing down. They want us completely dependent upon them, and then when we have to be to depend on them, they will either shut down the government so that there's no funds, and then they'll send out the little white vans to take us to the internment camps, talking about, yeah, we're going to help you, we're going to take you to safety.
Right.
You know,
Absolutely
people
right.
do need to prepare. They need to understand that we're very, very vulnerable. A few years ago, it flooded in Washington State. So for about a good 2 weeks, nothing, no trains and no cars could go the freeway, and part of the train track was just underwater. So there was no commerce able to get in. There was no food on the stores, no clothing. There was nothing that could get in or out. And so people have to understand, you have to figure out what are you going to do when you can go to the grocery store, but there's not going to be anything on the shelves for you to buy? How are you going to eat
right.
yourself, eat, feed yourself?
In
places like Flint, where the water is bad, you need to know how to purify your water, because you have to, using the millionaire concept, you have to be able to do these things to the matter of to the point of surviving. And we really need to get back to that point and stay there, really. You know,
right, because
so
what's
that
interesting about the Flint thing situation, mm-hmm. and that's sort of like it was in Detroit too, is interesting that the educational system in Flint did not prepare a whole population of people
yep.
on how to get water. A whole population,
yeah.
a whole city. And that's practically every city in the United States.
And we are so, the government goes, you know what, you can rely on the government. Sign up. We'll give you an EBD card. We'll give you food. We'll give you food stamps. We'll give you, you know, that little monetary thing. And then you get used to depending upon them. And then when you do that, it's like stuck. They reduce all the services. They take everything from you. They take all the control. All it takes is someone to drop a vial in the water system. All it takes is someone to flip a script, and the whole grid goes off. And how many times in the recent past has Facebook was just gone down? And a couple of years ago, a Google Navigator. And all went down because someone was hacking with the GPS and all of that.
You know, you need
so,
to have a podcast or two on that. Basically, if
people
better get
a compass.
Right, and how can we keep in touch with each other if the net goes down?
That has been a very pressing, burning desire for me, and I feel strongly that we need to set up back to the basics, long and short wave CB radios across the states, each of us, and then we check in on a weekly basis, and then that way we have a communications network set up so that if the grid goes down, the internet goes down, the phone goes down, we can still communicate. And still function.
You know what,
and
that,
still go on.
I might have to throw that into tomorrow's podcast because you're right.
Okay.
Communication is very so. If we've got with the internet now, we've got friends from all over the planet. But what do we
mm-hmm.
have if we don't have our computers? How can we communicate?
And if you have the long and short wave, those go worldwide. And so you can crank those things up and be talking to someone over in the diaspora and everywhere. So, I mean, it goes on seamless. It's basically the mobile platform, not to be confused with the cellular network. The mobile platform is the old AT&T telephone and telegraph, or the RSS simple syndication feed. It's how they reach the diaspora. It's how they're able to have mobile phones in places like Nigeria where they can't get a cell phone plan. So, does that make sense? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it does. It does. All right, Robin, thank you.
And it's not very...
The millionaire concept. We'll be back with more of that throughout the week. On that note, everyone have a good rest of the day.